This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, good afternoon, good morning. Evening.
Good morning.
Already
good morning,
said Peter. That. Robert, and to all you listeners from wherever you are.
You are still flashed, right?
Flashed?
Flashed by our event.
Yeah, right. I guess so. It was so impressive, yes, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 2 days AI in the Alps are behind us. And what are you taking with you?
What am I taking with me? I would really like to share a kind of number of experience, what I took with. Yeah, I guess I'm flashed, as you suggested. It was amazing, impressive again, but I don't want to just only be too, you know, impressed about the things that we do. What I maybe would like to do, but maybe you want to go first as well, let's just talk about the things that we did a little bit, you know, the different sessions, the topics.
Yeah, we had 3 sessions. We had 1 session on AI-based simulation, 1 session on certification, and then, of course, 1 session on industrial AI use cases. And it was very interesting because there were a lot of discussion about concrete use cases. I remember a discussion between Jochen Mades from KSB and Johannes Brandstetter, and Jochen wanted to know the path to an AI-based simulation for his pumps. And that's very interesting that our guests came with concrete questions, concrete use cases. And I think it's a really great that, for example, also Thomas Domes from Trustify will share his risk management templates with the participants, because from my point of view, everybody is now in the mood to start or to go further with a industrial AI project. Or what was your opinion?
Yeah, heavy topic, but very, I would almost say, lightly presented. Our main topic today is going to be about a very similar. I want to start actually with the simulation and then maybe move into the certification bit as well. And I want to do that by sharing the fact that in the evening we had like a Bavarian brass band. You know, we call it a cappella. Why do I say that? Because actually over the weekend I was playing, as you know, some of you listeners know, and I did play already once for you, Robert. I do play the baritone euphonium. So I talked to a colleague yesterday, young guy, Richard Weiss, and he had just finished some tests at the university. And one of them, and that was so interesting, he said, I said, oh, what were they asked? One of them was simulation. So I told him for now, and they had actually dealt also with machine learning, reinforcement learning. I'm not sure if in relationship with the simulation. So I said, well, that's good. Stick to what you've learned, but everything is going to change, you know. And to put it, I'm trying to put it into the words that I have understood it. And I'm going to say, like, I believe what we have been doing in simulation, right? And maybe I suggested that, you know, as I was studying architecture, it's a kind of simulation. It's, you know, we humans, we have learned for 1,000, 2,000, maybe more years, we've learned about the world and we've tried to put it into laws, you know. And then we project with all the knowledge that we have into the future. That's what we've been doing, at least from, let's say, the modern simulation, probably the last 50 years. And now that is going to be changing, you know, having algorithms look into our data and projecting whatever thoughts, ideas we have into the future, right? So I really do believe, and well, as you know, but you, dear listener, do not probably, we already did an interview with Johannes, right, at the Siemens AI for Purpose event, which we're going to be broadcast in the next couple of weeks. So there in the interview, and you will hear more about it. And that's also how actually Johannes, when he presented himself, started last week, right? So he talked about the work that he had been doing for Microsoft in Amsterdam on a new weather model, where he was explaining the same thing. He was sitting in front of this almost committee, you know, with weather experts from around the world. And he said, oh, I do not know a lot about weather, you know, but they already knew that everything was going to change completely. The model in the meantime is called Aurora, I believe, right, for those of you. So that's my feeling for the topic of the simulation, yeah. And that's how it was discussed in my session with Johannes here. Just for those of you that do not know, so we have three breakout sessions, and on the first day there's two in the afternoon, the next day there's one in the morning, and each of the attendees, you know, they go to either of them, you know, one time.
Exactly. What about the certification part? I think that was also very interesting from my point of view, because it's not only about paperwork, it's all about technique to use templates to validate your model. And I think Bernhard Nessler and Thomas Doms from Trustify explained that very, very well. I think everybody was very impressed by this session.
Yeah, the topic is not easy. It's the typical, you know, this is Europe again, you know, Europe regulation. So some of the topics we had on the list was the AI Act, Data Act, Cyber Resilience Act. And I brought it into combination with the EU Machinery Directive. That's our main topic. I'll talk, you know, a little bit about it at the end before we then go into the interview with Sasha. In the end, I think everybody attending just wanted to know what do we have to do? What is it? What are the steps now? Which is, of course, a topic that we have been seeing now since a couple of weeks. There's many organizations from everywhere that are now providing help in, you know, for all of you listeners that, you know, want to put your AI systems onto the European market. There's so many things you have to do, right? And that's what Thomas and Bernhard were telling us in a very, you know, nice ping pong way, working together. One of them giving an answer, another one giving an additional. And many times they were saying then, and they have this, what is it? I think if you translate it, question catalog is how we call it, Fragenkatalog. So what is the first question? And I don't have it like that in here, but it's like, in the end, it's like a hierarchical tree, right? You're going to ask yourself, I think that Stefan from Keba, he had one very specific project. In the end, I think it was
solved,
almost like lucky. Because he started asking his specific questions, and I think it was Thomas in this case, and he was, to each of his questions, he was giving like a no answer, like you're okay, oh no, then you're okay, or then you're okay. And after 5 minutes, and we were all just listening, right? And it was like, okay, in the end, after 5 minutes, it felt like, and he was trying to get like a confirmation. And he got the confirmation that he seemed to be okay with his solution. And then we were all thinking about what it really is that we need is this kind of, you know, Q&A, this question session, this question catalog for all of you listeners, so that you're going to go through. And we've seen, I believe, similar kind of solutions, approaches already. We, each of us in our bubbles, maybe on LinkedIn, elsewhere, where then you're going to know exactly, okay, with this use case I have here, I'm going to need to do, you know, everything that is necessary on one hand, and the other one, you know, I seem to be perfectly okay. And then there's hundreds, thousands of variations in between.
Absolutely. But what I found very interesting is what I mentioned before. It's not only about paperwork and a question catalog or something. It's also about technique, building systems, validation systems, templates to validate the models, the system. So it's because Bernhard explained what they are doing technically. And that impressed me, that it's not all about paperwork when you talk about certification at the end. Yeah.
Right. And what you, dear listener, hear now is that, you know, because you, Robert, were sitting in a different session, that's typically what you and I do. We just look around and sit there. So, yeah, that's what I don't recall specifically. I think it was after the first simulation session we did, and the expectation from Johannes, we're going to do, you know, the same. Oh, no, we never, not one of those sessions is the same. They're always around the topic. Each of those three topics, but they're always completely different because the people in the room, different, they have their own questions, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about use cases by Marco Huber from Fraunhofer IPA.
Yeah, the biggest list, right, as always. So Marco has been with us from the very beginning.
Thanks a lot, Marco.
I thought we'd be doing Was it the fourth, or is it really the fifth already that we did this time?
It's a monastery. Then we had AI in the Alps last year. Then we had AI at Aarburg, and it's a fourth. It's a fourth.
All right, there you go. So Marco has been with us from the beginning. Yeah, and the list was huge. We spent most of the time starting, and in our case, it's almost the conversation was going almost by itself. We started with the data swarm from Stefan.
Stefan Zuvelak.
Yeah, exactly. Renumix, talked about Gen AI, small models, so many different topics. And one thing that I have in my brain, interestingly, again, related to me playing the baritone, sorry for that. But as we walked around yesterday, and in that specific session with Marco, there was also Holger Ken. Holger is the chairman of the board of the OPC Foundation. He had actually stepped in for Stefan Hoppe, who in the end he couldn't make it. Now, why am I saying that? Because what we found out, and of course, you know, I'm not going to repeat that here, but you're going to hear more about it later, also probably in our industrial AI podcast and on the OPC Foundation podcast, that of course the OPC UA information model is like a knowledge graph. And that was the topic that we had. And Holger in this case was very modest, but it was almost like a logical thing that we talked about. And then we agreed we're going to be doing a podcast on the topic. And when I asked him where he lived, he said he lives exactly in the village where I yesterday was playing for a specific party. So I was, you can imagine, dear listener, you know, people kind of marching through the street. That's what I was doing. And when we were close to the place where we were supposed to be, and we were not playing, because if I play, I see completely nothing, only the notes in front of me. And I was waving to Holger, who was standing there in the street. That was very funny.
And you got a new nickname, right? You are the AI fanfare now.
Oh, fanfare, yeah. Is that the word? Is that the word?
Johannes gave you a new nickname, Peter the AI fanfare.
Yeah, probably.
You have to explain what is a fanfare.
Well, it is probably the, as I just said, maybe like marching band, almost like brass. I looked this morning because we say like, you know, and actually the word fanfare, where I was born in the Netherlands, that is the Dutch word as well. It's a group of people. It's a group of people, could be 50, 100, with all kind of different musicians. It's more like the light music, I would say. So it's not like symphonic or something. And we would typically, you know, play the Bavarian Alp music, as we call it as well, right? And that's maybe how I got the name, because of the fact that the Bavarian, the Alp, they were from Lech, I believe, right? This brass band.
Yeah. And now you are the AI fanfare. Peter, the AI fanfare. Industrial AI fanfare.
Well, I also should think we should again say thank you to our partners in Overmesse, represented by Unwura, and also Jonas by Sasha. And then there was a close-off session. That's what we typically do on the second day, the Friday morning. You know, we look back, what did we learn, what was good, what could we change? And before that, we had this presentation, I would say Q&A session, right, with NXAI CEO Albert Ortig. What did we talk about? Maybe the most important one is the European investment culture. Can I put it like that?
Oh, I think the most important topic was that he reported that NVIDIA was guest in Linz and they were very interested in XLSTM.
Oh, right. Yeah, most certainly. Because they have two legs to stand on. The second one is the simulation as represented by Johannes. Well, talking about the next steps for the training larger models, at the same time, very important, I think that Albert is convinced that small models are going to be playing in a really important role. But I think they're going to go one or two steps further, just showing their capabilities, right?
Yeah, they're running now 7 billion parameters, I think, in the moment, he said. And they're going to 30 billion parameters, I think, in what he said in August, I think, yeah.
Right. Yeah, but as I said, I believe it's more like showing what they can, but at the same time, they have a big expectation with regards to the small models. Two more things that I had written down here is just as a reminder, we have to, and we shall be specifically saying thank you very much to Barbara Merz, who organized everything in a perfect way, as always. And maybe we should talk about the hike down the Adelberg as well, is what we typically do in the Friday afternoon.
Oh, it still hurts.
Yeah, right.
My legs are.
I guess roughly half of the attendees joined. Wonderful, wonderful, amazing view on top, not on top of the Arlberg, but it's one of the chain of the Arlberg, right?
Yeah. And the next stop is AI at the Danube in October. So until now, we are organizing our new event. So it's in October with Jakub Tomczak, and we're looking forward to Jan Kautnik, and of course, the one and only Marco Huber for industrial AI use cases.
Exactly. Yeah, there we go. So now we have to do normal work again.
Exactly.
Robert, although that is part of our work, of course, as well. But it was good. It was great. We did receive one or two minor suggestions for, you know, things we could add or do a little bit different. But we had the feeling that everybody was very happy. Networking is, as always, the most important thing. And in our conclusion session, you know, so many ideas of what we want to do. We said, okay, now you've all got to know each other, just work together and do new things. And the hope almost was that, you know, as we were suggesting a year ago, you know, history was made in the Stube 2, so one of the breakout sessions, which in the end resulted into a new company, NXAI. And this time we could have the CEO of NXAI as well as their VP of research, Johannes, with us. And we suggested that, you know, we would be very happy that the same maybe will have happened in the last couple of days. And that next year we can, you know, again hear a presentation from another new great company.
I think Werner from our work will share some ideas with the participants. I'm really looking forward to what Werner Faulhaber will tell us next year. Yeah. Okay, Peter, that's it for the news part, or it was not a news part, it was a recap of AI in the Alps. What do you have in the main part?
Yeah, I'll share with you just 2-3 lines of input, kind of. So the main topic is about the EU Machinery Regulation Directive with Sascha Steinkraus. One or two of you, dear listener, may have or may now recognize his name. I think as we were still doing the recordings in German, is that right? Was it me? I think I did already.
Yeah, it was you, yeah.
Right. Actually, his family name, Steinkraus, is the same as the family name of Uwe Steinkraus, who is an important person in the OPC Foundation. But I think I already had asked Sasha that they are not related. Now, the new, and as I just suggested at the beginning of today's news, you know, the EU machinery regulation is just one of so many regulations. And yes, I do completely understand that doesn't matter where you're from, dear listener, from the United States, China, or what did you suggest over the weekend? Korea even, Robert?
Oh, our podcast is in the Korean charts on place 16 or something.
All right, there you go. So wherever you are, whenever you hear, and we do not do too much, but you know, this time we have to spend one time per whatever on this topic. It's one of the many regulations. It replaces an existing machinery directive. It will apply from January 2027, and it regulates the manufacture, placing on the market, commissioning of machines, basically. And the first time, specifically, artificial intelligence, and also that is why we talk about it, and cybersecurity is taken in account. It is what we call in German schwere Kost, directly translated as heavy food, I would say.
No, heavy metal. Heavy metal, I think it's the right.
Heavy metal, really. So in the end, meaning it's not an easy topic. It's a difficult, complex topic. It's regulation. Now, having said that, you know, I'm sure that some of you listeners are not the typical engineer, decision maker type, but maybe more like, let's say, in the legal department. Some of you are in charge of making sure that, you know, when you bring the machines to market, that legally everything is fine and okay. That's what you, and for you can listen to this, you probably want to listen, get a view from one of the specialists, but there's many people of you that are not directly in charge, but you are part of designing your machines, and you, I believe, you need to be aware of what it is that at least the EU is expecting from what in the end you're going to put onto the market. And even some of you, which until today do not know that also you're going to be in charge, because that's going to be different this time from the future. Now there's more people who are going to be put in charge of, you know, not only designing, but also putting the machines onto the market. So good luck.
I'm really looking forward, Peter. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to work together with you when we're talking about podcasts or we talk about events and, yeah, or our AI in the canteen. It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for all that.
Thank you, Robert. It's always nice meeting with you in the Alps.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
My guest today is Sascha Steinkraus. Our topic today is machinery regulation, and specifically we're going to get into the regulation of the machinery AI. Hello, Sascha.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. You were with us before. Now, how long back is that?
That's right. I think it's about, I don't know, maybe 2 years.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought, yeah.
Yes.
So some of our listeners may actually recall, oh, yeah, that's the guy who was at that time talking about, well, you let us know. Nevertheless, for that reason, just please share with our listeners who you are and what you do.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, my name is Sascha Steinkraus. I'm running a company on my own. It's all about machinery safety. We were talking the last time as I was studying in Graz at the University of Applied Sciences. Yeah, my master thesis was about trustworthy AI, and this is how we came together. So, but actually my job is to make machinery safe, and therefore I'm really no machinery directive, and I have to know machinery regulation for the future.
Which I assume is a subset of trustworthy AI, right?
Exactly, yeah, right.
So yeah, you started at a certain higher level maybe, but that you then decided to concentrate on what it is that you do today, and you will be talking about that later on. So, quote unquote, the new EU machinery regulation, EU 2023-1230 replaces the machinery directive 2006/42/EC, and will apply from January 2027. It says it regulates the manufacture, placing on the market, and commissioning of machines. For the first time, it explicitly takes current developments in digitalization, artificial intelligence, and cybersecurity into account. Quote stop. So that's the start of an article I read a couple of months back, I believe, in German it was. So this is the translation of. Not sure. I guess Google maybe. And I thought, you know, our listeners need to hear about this. And of course, I thought immediately of you, Sascha, as you just suggested, because I knew that that is your topic. So I contacted you and you said you first need to get acquainted with the machinery regulation English language terminology, right? So here we are today. This is not a test, Sascha. We'll forgive you.
Yeah,
and okay. Please forgive me, dear listeners, if one of us maybe uses the one or the other term incorrectly. So, Sascha, for a start, tell us, please give us an introduction. We will be concentrating as much as we can a little bit later on in the center of our talk on the AI aspects. But maybe as a starter, please give us an introduction to the new EU machinery regulation, please.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, of course, right now we have the machinery directive, which is for machine builders, for manufacturers of machinery. And because of development, because of new technologies, the EU Commission found out, okay, new technologies might lead to new hazards, to new risks of that type of machinery. And therefore, we need some more specific safety requirements according to these new technologies. So the machinery directive right now has to be fulfilled within the European Union, the so-called EFTA states. And we also have agreements, we have contracts with Switzerland, the Turkey, and right now the UK. So what's the directive all about? The directive is all about we have to have minimum safety requirements, which have to be fulfilled by every machine builder when building a machine. So that you make sure nobody gets hurt when using a machine which is placed on the market. So, and the regulation Yeah, you said, okay, it has to be fulfilled from January 20th, 2027. But
that's what I read. Yeah, was that not correct?
No, it is correct for the most part, but some parts of the regulation already have to be fulfilled. But that's more for the notified bodies and also for the evaluation of the so-called high-risk machinery list. So this has already started. But it's not that important for the machine builders.
Well, we still may talk about it later on in detail.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what it's all about. Yeah. The regulation tries to define some more specific safety requirements.
Right. So, yeah, I think the comparison between the two is probably very useful. If I understand correctly, 2006 machinery directive. So we're talking what, 20? No, not completely. Yeah, almost maybe 18 years. So what is new? What are the structural pieces that are different from the new EU machinery regulation in relation to what we have had for the last, as I said, maybe almost 20 years? Machinery directive.
Okay. Well, to say in the first place, it's now called a regulation beforehand, or right now it is a directive. So what's the difference between them? The regulation does not have to be, I would say, transformed into national law. So this is like, okay, the directive is only addresses the member states, and the member states have to put them into national law. So this is not necessary with the regulation. That's the first thing. And what's inside the regulation, we have smaller things like some changed or new definitions, which very interesting definition, just to have an example, is the safety component. Before, it was more a component as we think of it, a physical thing, which you can touch. But right now, it means a physical or a digital component, including software of a product within the scope. So plus it has to fulfill a safety function. It's all about safety. The whole directive is about the safety aspect. So if it's just for the process and the process is not hazardous, then it's not a problem. But if it's going into the safety, then you have to take a closer look. So one big thing is, okay, right now it can be software, which is in the regulation. One thing you said it, as you were quoting, I think beforehand it was placing on the market, but now it's making available on the market, which changes quite a lot. So the placing on the market means the first making available, but it can be the supply of a product, the distribution. So which brings us to the economic operators, as we were talking later. So there are some definitions which tell us what to take a closer look at. We also have new goals of the machinery regulation. As I said before, we have some new technologies, and the regulation is trying to cover the risks of these technologies. Like, we have one big topic is industrial security. We have, for example, updating software and the potential consequences, as I said before. Yeah, it's not just the physical components, but also the digital aspect. We have autonomous mobile machinery, which I think is not really necessary to include it in the directive, but anyhow. And we also have the human-machine collaboration. We know that from human-robot collaboration, for example. Which is now included in the directive. And what I said before, the so-called high-risk machinery. Beforehand, we just had a list, which was, I don't know, one PDF page, for example, and there were some specific machinery listed. And right now, we have divided that list into two parts, and this list has to be evaluated by the European Commission. Yeah, but we can talk about that later in more detail. And maybe one last big thing I would say is the documentation, the instructions for use. They can be delivered digital right now. Yeah, before they said, okay, you have to print it out and give it with the machine to the customer. Right now it's possible, or with the regulation, it's possible to deliver it digital. And they even updated the guideline of the actual directive. So you can already deliver digital documentation if you take a look at the instructions for use.
And then the customer can still print it out if they want to, I guess.
Right, right.
There you go. Okay, here are a couple of things, and we're going to go into the details of all of them. First question was, so is then the regulation at the same level or from a what it means for the specific European countries as the AI Act? Because I understand the AI Act was the same, right? You know, as soon as it was decided, or I'm not exactly sure which state we as soon as, you know, decided we have an AI Act, it's the same that not all the countries need to do a separate making it come true in their countries, right?
I hope so. I hope so. Actually, I'm not sure about it.
Okay.
Because they're always talking about the act and not the regulation. So that's...
That was actually the reason for my question. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
But I let's assume that, yeah, as you confirmed, you know, so the regulation has been already, when was that?
That was last year.
No, yeah. It was maybe half a year ago. When was it decided?
Last year in June, I think.
Right. So anyway, we keep it at that. One important thing, maybe you can quickly, because, and I recall from my final job at that time working for Softing, that about the term safety, security, you mentioned actually both. Maybe in one, two sentences, what is the difference between safety and security?
Okay, let me think of it. I just recently heard a very good definition, which I like. I'm trying to translate it into English. Is safety is you're trying to find measures that the machine does not hurt you or a person. And security is you find measures that the human does not hurt the machine.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's a very good way.
Something like this. So I like that.
Right. And because meaning we have, you know, let's call them whatever, bad people, and they try to get into our machines. They try to get into our notebook, into our smartphone, and in the end, into our machines as well. Typically through software, maybe a combination of, what is it, phishing and many kind of other things. And safety is the other way around. The robot should not hurt us. Very good. Yeah, I thought I just want to make that clear for those listeners that are not used to. So then why then the new regulation? Can you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, the first thing, as I said, the new goals, they wanna cover new risks and yeah, define some measures for that. Because maybe they thought, the European Commission thought that there might be a gap between the new technology and those arising hazards. And yeah, it's some things, as I said, autonomous mobile machinery. I would say, okay, we have a standard for that. I would say it wouldn't be necessary to include it into the directive. I don't know why they did that, because maybe, yeah, because it's some kind of a hype topic, because everywhere you have mobile machinery right now. But I would say, okay, it's more, I think the other requirements which we already have in the directive might have been enough to address those risks of mobile machinery, but anyhow, yeah.
Okay, yeah, but I understand, yeah. So whatever has happened over the last 20 years, and maybe just that they now concentrate also in addition on software, is that the big, maybe the big thing, the importance of the relative share of, you know, what makes machinery in the end? 20 years ago, it was maybe close to 100% hardware and a little bit of software, a couple of percentage points, and these days, the value of the machinery is, you know, whatever, but a lot higher percentage software in relation to hardware as well.
I think, yeah, you're right. I think there are two things according software. One thing is we already have a standard for software according safety aspects, functional safety, which is EN ISO 38.49. And we have part one for the systems. We have part two for the validation. Yeah. So problem is, It was validated more or less, I would say. Yeah. So in the field, you could see, due to the complexity of it, some manufacturers just say, okay, we're doing some testing and that has to be enough. But if you take a look into the standard, it is a little more complex. So, and I think the reason why they put it into the regulation is, okay, everyone has to fulfill the regulation. Standards are not mandatory in the first place. Yeah, you should apply them, especially if they are harmonized. So it's indirectly mandatory, but not directly. So, but if you have it written down in the regulation, then it definitely has to be fulfilled. Yeah. So I think that's a reason. And yeah, as you said, okay, the software part is getting bigger and bigger.
Okay, now I've read a couple of comments from several organizations, companies. How do you see? And you made already reference to the point that we talk about the AI Act. We have several standards, so there's always some overlap. Now, is in your perspective, is the new machinery regulation the big hit? Is it a major revolution, which maybe we had heard about for many years? How do you see it yourself?
I wouldn't say so, but I think you can never think of it as a big hit or something like this, because you just add things or you delete some parts which you think are not necessary anymore. But in my experience, it's the laws, the directives, the regulations are getting bigger and bigger and more complex. And some parts are good to be added. Some parts just make it more, yeah, as I said, complex. And for some people, they just say, okay, I don't see the sense. I'm not even trying to look through the complexity, because it's not just within the regulation of machinery, but also, as you said, it's the AI Act. It's several things according security, which are aside from machinery directive. So if, or maybe batteries, yeah, for example, we were just talking about that a few weeks ago with some former colleagues. You have an own regulation, I'm not sure, a regulation or a directive for batteries. So if you have mobile machinery, you will have a battery, for example. You will also have to think about electromagnetic compatibility. You have to think about maybe the security aspect. You have to think about, yeah, the machinery aspect, maybe the mechanical part, yeah. And yeah, of course, the software is a big part right now, but it's getting more and more complex. And as I said, some things are really good, but some parts are, yeah, doubled or three times in different regulations, directives. And yeah, this is just making it more complex and not easier for the machine builder to apply.
Yeah, but then the machine builder, they can come to you and ask you, right, as a consultant.
Of course.
There you go. Yeah. And I'm sure the next one, which is then, I don't know, is it going to take another 20 years? Maybe not. You can maybe be asked to make things less. Now, we need to work with what we have. So you already suggested not everything is included. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that. What is exactly then the scope of the machinery regulation? What is in and what is out, as an example?
Okay. The scope is pretty close, pretty narrow, and pretty much like we had it before. So this regulation applies to machinery and the following related products. So this is pretty much the same, just the term related products is new. So interchangeable equipment, safety components, lifting accessories, chains, ropes, webbing, removable mechanical transmission devices. So these are the related products. And beforehand, they just said machinery is machines and all those related products. And this was always a little confusing. But the complete text of the regulation had now to be changed at every part where they said machinery. Now it's they say machinery and the following related products. Not that interesting, but at some parts they missed this addition. So at some parts, there's just saying, okay, it's machinery and the related products just fell out. So you have to take a close look if you build these related products.
Okay, good. And later on, when I'm going to ask you about what do listeners that are, those of you listeners that are into the topic, you know what to do. Those at the next level around who are only on the side of it, you can maybe, or we can already share that now. You need to be sure that don't think that if you're outside of what you believe is machinery, you may be included in the related products, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and you already said, I read somewhere that, for example, what is it? There is a separate regulation for low voltage or for other pieces that are not then included in the machinery, right?
Exactly, exactly. So machinery directive right now also includes the goals, the targets of also of low voltage directive. So this is why if you normally if you apply machinery directive, you also hit the goals of low voltage directive. But there are some exemptions, like, I don't know, a washing machine, for example. They fall under the scope of low voltage directive because not the mechanical parts, like the machinery parts, are that hazardous, but more or less the voltage. Yeah. So
we will be talking about AI, specifically software slash towards artificial intelligence. So how does the already mentioned before AI Act relate to, and how do maybe the high risk machines mentioned in, not as such maybe in the AI Act, but is there an overlap between the two, or are they kept completely separate?
Well, actually, I would say they're overlapping, because if you take a closer look at what I said before, we've had the definition of safety components, yeah, which can be software as well. And if you take a look at the annex, before it was annex 4, right now it's, or with the regulation, it's annex 1, the so-called high-risk machines. Then you have, okay, it is separated into two parts. Yeah, I'm to that later. But if we take a look at part A, then there was added the safety components with fully or partially self-evolving behavior. So machine learning, using machine learning approaches, ensuring safety functions. So this is new, completely new. And this is part A of the so-called high-risk machines, even if it's not a machine itself. Yeah, it's just the safety component. It's just the safety software, but using machine learning approaches. Yeah. The next thing is machinery that has embedded systems with fully or partially self-evolving behavior using machine learning approaches, ensuring safety functions that have not been placed independently on the market in respect only of those systems. So whether you're only doing safety component, yeah, safety software using machine learning, then this thing would probably also be completely part of the AI Act, I think. And the next thing is machinery that has embedded software using machine learning. This is more or less just covered by the machinery regulation. Yeah, but we'll see how that will be in the,
yeah, we're not going to go into the details of that, but I think an important message is that you, dear listener, may need to look into the AI Act as well as into the machinery regulation.
Yeah. Actually, if we're talking about CE marking, yeah, it's not just the marking, it's the conformity assessment process. So if you assess the conformity, then you have to take a look at every, right now, most of them are directives, yeah, but also regulations that require CE marking. And you have to take a look at all of these, and maybe you build a machine, or maybe you're just doing some software, but it can be that that you fall within the scope of more than just one directive or regulation. So, and you have to fulfill all of them. So can I just say, okay, just because I'm building a machine, I'm not taking a look into any other directive or regulation? That's not as it works. But if there are some more or more specific requirements which also apply to your machine, then can be that you also have to apply other directives or regulations. Yeah.
Now, I assume that although, and I'm very happy if also you, dear listener, who are maybe, you know, an authorized representative of your company for exactly this theme, and you think, okay, I just want to know what Sasha has to tell. Maybe you guys know each other, even who knows. But I do believe that this is a topic also, as I suggested already before, a wider audience, people around who are not in charge, but are somehow related to the design production of machinery or the usage of machinery. So let's talk about it a little bit. Who is then the target audience? For who is this machinery regulation relevant?
Okay, actually, in general, yeah, I would say every machine builder, but also if we're talking about the people within the companies, in bigger companies, very often there is a responsible person for CE marking, I would say, or conformity assessment or something like this. Those people have to take a look that they fulfill all CE requirements or legal requirements, I would say. Yeah. But in fact, in the detail, yeah, it's necessary for every designing engineer. Doesn't matter if it's electrical, mechanical, or right now, very important control system designer, to design a safe machine, yeah, and to take a look at not just the regulation, but also according standards then, yeah.
And how do they make sure they do that? So yeah, right. So knowing the law, I would say. So knowing, learning about the machinery regulation. Maybe they go to conferences. Maybe they call you. Maybe they have you get in, or other organizations like TÜV. I don't know. But then, what are the typical things that exactly those people, maybe part of them, our listeners, what do they do in their daily job, so to say? How do they make sure that in the end a safe machine comes out that applies, that it is conform with the machinery regulation?
Okay, so first thing is the conformity assessment. Right now it changes a little bit. As I said before, the high-risk machinery was divided into two parts, or the list of it. And the first part right now has to have a notified body for conformity assessment. Right now we have it with the directive. We have it somehow like it, but not really like this, because right now, if you have a Type C standard, which covers all your risks of your high-risk machinery, and you apply the Type C standard, you don't need a notified body, not necessarily. Yeah? But in the future, in the regulation, there are Part A machinery, which is also the safety components, yeah, the safety software. For those part, you will need a notified body, like TÜV or something.
Oh, that's called a notified body. Okay, yeah. Yeah, most people will have heard about TÜV. I'm not sure if that's an international term, but notified bodies, how you call it.
Yeah, and this list and part B is like before. Yeah, it's pretty much like we have it in the directive right now. But this list will be evaluated by the European Commission. I think it's every 4 years. I think it's 4 years, yeah. So it might be that after 4 years, yeah, this list looks completely new, because maybe the commission found out, okay, no, this type of machinery, now we found an adequate measure, which just makes the machine less risky, yeah, something like this. Or maybe there are, due to a new technology, new developments, might be new machinery or kinds of machinery, which now then are also high-risk machinery. So we have to take a look at that Annex 1. When it changes, or if it changes, and maybe I have to apply a different type of conformity assessment.
Right. So if you are working for whatever, an injection molding machine builder, then you can go and look at the list and see if injection molding machines are on that list or not on the list.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it.
Are they or not?
I have to look it up. I'm not sure.
There are, okay, good.
There are a lot of saws, like sawing machinery. Could be presses, for example, or machinery for lifting people, something like this.
Yeah, when we go live, we'll make sure that we'll add a comment. I can imagine. Well, I don't know, but I'm not going to suggest that injection molding machines are dangerous if maybe they're not. It was just an example. So there's a couple of other things that we can, but maybe not at the moment. I really want to move into the software, into the artificial intelligence. What does the new machinery regulation say about AI? I think you already mentioned the word specifically machine learning, which is interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the first thing is, okay, now the software is also, even if it's not a machine, yeah, it's also covered by the regulation. Yeah, main part I would say is you have to make sure that you, as it's been written in the regulation, you shall collect evidence of legitimate or illegitimate intervention in the software or a modification of the software. So you have to track, somehow any modification to prove, okay, I delivered the machine or a software with that, I don't know, with that checksum, for example. Yeah. And if it's modificated, then this might lead to some new hazards, which are not part of my risk assessment. Yeah. So.
But that sounds like, according to the definition you gave before, we talked about safety, security. It sounds like a security breach, maybe, which then would make the machine potentially unsafe.
Yeah, you're right. So you have to think about measures according security, but also according, maybe internal. Yeah, so because you buy a machine and as the operator of the machine, okay, you know your process a little better. And after a very short time, very often, you have to adapt the software. So, but if you adapt the safety part of the software, it might lead to new hazards. And therefore, it has to be somehow tracked to make sure, okay, if something happens, you have to make sure that the person liable for this has done a new risk assessment or found some new risk measures, risk reduction measures.
Wow. I was not going to talk about it, but is that what they call this substantial modification? Does that mean that maybe your customer, so your machine builder, your customer is going to make a change to the software, if that's possible? So maybe you want to make sure that that's not possible. But let's say that if they would do that, do they then become, is that also, what is it, other term that I forgot? So do they then make a substantial modification? And what does that mean? Do they then need a new assessment?
Yeah, right. This is also new. Yeah, we were not talking about that before. The substantial modification was beforehand. Right now we have so-called manufacturer directives and regulations, and we have operator directives and regulations. So if you're putting a machine on the market, if you're placing it on the market, then you have the manufacturer directive, machinery directive. So, but after you put it on the market, it's in the hands of the operator. Yeah? So you cannot do anything afterwards. And if they modificate it, then that was part of the operator directives right now. Yeah? And this is pretty different from country to country. So even if we look from right now, I'm sitting in Vienna, and you're sitting in Germany. Even if we're both talking in German language, we have a different approach to that. Yeah? Not very different, but slightly. Yeah? So, and all the other countries, I don't know if there are some papers or interpretations or something like this according this modification topic, but I know it from Germany and from Austria. There are some in Austria you have a folder from the Austrian accident insurance. I don't know if it's the correct term. And in German there is an interpretation paper from a German ministry, and they wanted, they know, the European Commission knew that, okay, this is going into different directions and they want to just level it up at the same level. So this is why they brought it into the machinery regulation. But now it's not just a manufacturer regulation, but also an operator regulation somehow.
Okay. So now the operator needs to be aware of it as well. So maybe they will have new responsibilities now.
Basically, no, I would say. The main problem is, okay, what is substantial? This is always the discussion. Okay, is making sure the process is running a little better, is this a substantial modification? Yeah, or we will talk about that in the future, I think, even if it's now the same for all over Europe. Yeah? But I think there will be discussions anyhow.
You already mentioned, I think there's talk specifically of the term machine learning, is it right? Or so somewhere, self-learning machine. Which is interesting. If I think back almost like the last year in our podcast, I think, this is a very specific topic we have today. But for the majority, 90%, we've been talking about large language models, about generative AI. And then comes, you already said it's from last year as well. But then that's what the machinery regulation does not specifically talk about. Is that a typical, potential, the market is moving so fast, always moving faster than what regulation can take care of?
Well, as I said, the Annex 1, the high-risk machinery, which is also the safety components, there, this is written down. But we also have, if we take a look at Annex 2, this is the indicative list of safety components. There are two new headings. The first thing, the second thing is safety components with, as we said, fully or partially self-evolving evolving behavior using machinery learning approaches, ensuring safety functions. But we also have one thing which is just saying software ensuring safety functions. So this is not just according machinery learning approaches. This can be any approach. So
whatever we talk about, large language models, generative AI, whatever we call it.
In the end, it has to fulfill a safety function. And this is what I don't see right now. Yeah, this is what they are trying to cover with the new regulation. But right now, I'm not seeing any software ensuring safety functions, which is using, I don't know, machine learning or something like this. Yeah, very often, or as I see right now, even if the process uses machine learning or any of these, the safety concept is always above it. So the process itself has to be covered by the whole safety concept, and then it doesn't matter if the process changes a little bit. But yeah, as we see, development is getting faster and faster. So maybe we talk about that next month.
Yeah, well, that was my point. Maybe you could say that whatever we talk about, large language models, generative AI, is like machine learning based. But it just specifically where, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, we talked about reinforcement learning. And then we talked a year or two about, you know, machine learning. And now we talk a year about generative AI, large language models. Who knows what we're going to be talking about in the next couple of years. So I want to kind of round this off, and what you suggest, again, I'm sure that the people in charge in the companies of you, your colleagues, their listeners, you know, if you're a small manufacturer, it may be, you know, one person doing everything, safety in addition. If you're a big company, then if it is not your specific job, then your colleague will probably take care. You can always discuss with him or her. But the people around it, kind of what are the things that you suggest people do that are interested in this topic that maybe can add some value into the process of designing, manufacturing safe machines?
Well, the main part is always the risk assessment. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you build, what you're programming, or whatever kind of technology you're using. You always have to think about, okay, what risk might be posed because of that. Yeah? So, actually, if you're doing a real good risk assessment right now, you wouldn't need the addition of the regulation. Yeah? Because you have to already think about anything which might lead to a risk. So therefore, just make sure to stay up to date, yeah, and think about, okay, what potential risks might occur. So as we were talking in my study, I was talking about the trustworthy AI. There is a guideline from the Fraunhofer Institute, which already tell you what kind of pretty detailed, which is like a standard, I would say, pretty detailed, what kind of risk can occur and what measures can I take right now. Yeah, maybe in the future there might be better measures, but we can always just talk about today and think about which might be a better risk reduction measure. Yeah. And this is what I suggest everyone building a machine programming to do. It's not about the documentation, the writing it down. It's about thinking, okay, you also have to do the writing, but it's about thinking, okay, which is a good risk reduction measure according this potential hazard. Yeah? And this is what it's all about.
Very good. As a final close off, as I typically like to do, in this case, you know, putting this in perspective, the machinery directive, is it a typical European thing? You know, we like to regulate things. That's the name that we have, so to say. Or at the same time, you know, does similar regulation exist in the United States, in China, in other parts of the world? Is this good for Europe? What is lacking?
First thing I would say, yeah, it's typical European because it's regulated down to the last thing they think about. But actually, we have different approaches if we take a look globally. I'm not that deep into the China or US market because enough to do in Europe. But in the US, you have a complete different focus. Of course, everyone in the end thinks a little bit about the safety aspect, but some just let go a little more beforehand and they wait until the accidents happen. And then they say, okay, now we have to do something there. In the US, for example, you have to have, I don't know, UL listed parts for the electrical parts, for example. The fire safety is very important. You have the NFPA code 70 or 79, I think. So that's all about the fire safety. You don't need the CE marking as we have it here, but you have OSHA and ANSI standards. So it's not a regulation, it's not a directive, but in the end you have similar, even if they're completely contrary or not completely or slightly contrary if we compare them. But of course you have standards which tell you, okay, if I build a machine like this, then I should also apply some kind of safety measure. But according the addition right now in the regulation, I would say, okay, we're somehow going the first step because we always a little afraid of doing something wrong. And as I said, for example, the Americans, they just say, okay, just let go, let's do it. And then they see, okay, if they did good or if they have to add some measures.
If something happens, the judge will decide, exactly. Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good to hear. I would agree. That's not agree. I mean, after having heard the way that you put it, then this is probably the typical European approach, putting the human in the center, so to say, make sure that the European human, strives and is happy. And in other parts of the world, we do it, they do it, you do it, definitely. Sasha, we could talk for a long time in addition on this topic, but thank you very much for giving us kind of a first thinking into, as you suggested, for all of you, dear listeners, make sure whatever you do is think about what could go wrong with your machines if you're in charge, or if not, if you're part of the team designing new equipment, or maybe you're going to be asking generative AI to be designing your next machines. Thank you very much, Sasha. Listeners that want to get in touch with you can do that best through LinkedIn. Is that okay, Sasha Steinkraus?
Of course, every time.
That is S-A-S-C-H-A, Steinkraus, S-T-E-I-N-K-R-A-U-S-S. Otherwise, dear listeners, thank you very much that you stay with us. It's not an easy topic. I'm sure, again, if you do need support, that Sasha is very willing to help you out. Looking forward to have you with us again. If there is anything you want to share with me, please send me an email to peter@aipod.de. Looking forward to have you with us again. Sasha, thank you very much for your detailed knowledge on the topic.
Peter, thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.